blushing and staring at her feet. "I'm coming with you," she announced. "That's part of the deal."
"What deal?"
"Our deal."
"Do we have a deal?"
he asked. "We do now."
"Maybe you missed the part where I told you I was grounded. I gotta get home after school."
"Did you ride the bus?"
"My bike."
"Huh, there you go," she said. "Me too. We'll just happen to stop there on the way home."
Amanda lifted her head, as if she'd heard something. Her hair whipped around as she turned to look down the hall.
"Uh-oh,"
she said. All at once, Finn felt a numbing coldness pass through him, a wave of nausea, as if all the blood had suddenly drained out of him. He sank to his knees. Amanda caught him as he was going down, her book spilled. Some kid stepped out of her way.
"Finn, Finn, are you okay?"
"Cold,"
he managed to explain. She hugged him, trying to warm him. Finn couldn't keep his teeth from chattering. His whole body was shaking. Amanda pleaded with him.
"Finn,"
she rubbed his arms.
"Think of someplace warm. A beach, a boat, hot, hot sun. It's a hot beach on a summer day."
Finn felt himself warming. The more he thought of the beach, the warmer he felt. A moment later, he felt fine. He leaned away from her.
"Whoa,"
he said.
"That was some kind of strange."
A small group of kids that had gathered moved on. Finn stood up.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
she asked.
"Felt like I blew a fuse,"
he told her.
"Thanks for the coaching. Where'd you learn that?"
"So much of that stuff is in our minds,"
was all she said. She giggled.
"I thought you fainted,"
he said.
"You turned, just before, like you heard something. What was with that?"
She looked away. She didn't offer an answer. Now it dawned on him what had just happened.
"It isn't safe," he mumbled.
Amanda's brow knit in grave concern. The second bell rang. Finn whispered dryly,
"Now I know I've got to get to Willa and Maybeck. I'll meet you out by the bikes after the last bell."
11. Crazy Glaze was crowded with mothers and their children busily painting blank pottery at brightly lit tables. There were several connected rooms, all filled with color and the murmur of activity. Finn and Amanda locked their bikes out front. Once inside, they were directed to a heavy-set, gray-haired African-American woman who wore hoop earrings and dark purple eyeshadow.
"I'm looking for Donnie Maybeck," Finn said.
"You mean Terry," she said, a smile overcoming her. "Donnie's his stage name. Say, aren't you a sweet-looking girl?" she said, noticing Amanda and studying her features. "Who should I say is calling?" "Wait a minute," she interrupted herself. "Don't I know you?" she asked Finn. "You're a host, right? I saw you at MGM during the film shoot."
"Yes, ma'am,"
she nodded, proud of herself. "That's it, exactly. I was over there nearly every day you all were shooting. But you, girl, I remember you, and I don't believe we've met."
"Amanda, a friend of Finn's."
"Well, I'm pleased to meet you both. I'm Terry's Aunt Bess. I run this place. Own it, too."
As she grinned, the room seemed a bit brighter.
"Kids all around here call me Jelly."
"Jelly?"
Amanda said.
"It's a long story. It started with jelly donuts and got out of control from there. Don't ask me."
"Is Terry around?"
Finn asked.
"Terry's out back, but he's taking it easy today, not feeling exactly top-notch. I'm not sure this is the best day for a visit."
"He didn't happen to feel faint, did he?"
Finn blurted out. The woman's face hardened. She crossed her arms tightly and looked down at Finn.
"Now why would you go and ask that?"
"I need to see him, Miss Jelly."
Finn saw the way his guess had struck her.
"School nurse said there's a bug going round," she said.
"And maybe that's all it is,"
Finn said.
"What is it you're not telling me, son?"
Jelly asked.
"I really need to see him,"
Finn pleaded. When she nodded, her double chin turned into a triple.
"Okay. Just not too long, here."
"You,"
Maybeck said to Finn, looking up. He was a head taller than either of them. His expression was defiant. There was a hardness in his eyes. He was in the midst of unpacking unglazed ceramics. He didn't want them there. Finn introduced Amanda. Maybeck said hey to her. He looked at Finn curiously.
So what's going on?
Are we okay to talk here? Finn asked. Maybeck looked around, closed a door that led into the front of the shop, and said,
We're good.
How's your sleep these past couple nights?
What's with that? Maybeck asked.
Had any vivid dreams? Maybeck looked searchingly from Finn to Amanda. Finn said, She knows. I've told her everything.
I'm not saying I have or haven't, Maybeck said.
Did you make these? Amanda pointed to a series of beautifully painted water pitchers on a shelf amid dozens of other bowls and mugs. The image on the pitchers was the Cinderella Castle.
Doris like 'em.
But you painted them, she said.
Yeah, I sell them on the side.
He lowered his voice and said to Finn,
Listen, the money, from Disney, being at DHI, it's made a big difference for us, my aunt and me. I can't risk their asking for that money back.
That's not going to happen.
How do you know it won't?
Finn hadn't ever considered such a thing. His mother would kill him if he lost his college money. Do you have internet access? Amanda asked. Finn glanced over at her. Why did she always have the best ideas? He wondered.
Sure, Maybeck answered.
Finn said, The others and I, tonight we're meeting in my guest room in the Virtual Magic Kingdom website to get this stuff straight. He paused and added, It's happening to all of us, Maybeck. The dreams of being there, the fainting this afternoon.
Not me.
Maybeck looked briefly afraid. Finn said, The old guy Wayne? He's got some kind of mission for us. As a team, I'm talking about. He says we've got to go to sleep at some point, and that when we do, we're going to cross over. Maybeck looked completely serious. There was not a laughing bone in his body.
I can't mess things up for my aunt.
We can't stop this, Finn warned. Whatever's happening, we can't stop it. At least I haven't been able to. Have you? He felt another little chill. He said, It isn't safe. Maybeck met eyes with him, a mean look, both afraid and angry. He had heard those words before.
No way,
he said darkly. Way, said Finn. Maybeck said,
Yeah, well, then I guess we gotta do this.
12. Finn's mother fumbled around with the serving plates, as nervous as could be. Her son had never brought a girl home for dinner before, and she was quite beside herself. She served meatloaf with green beans and bacon, salad and cornbread, only to discover that Amanda was a vegetarian. Finn's father was quieter than usual. About halfway through the meal, he asked Amanda to pass the salt. Finn's mom told his father, Amanda and Finn are going to chat online together after dinner.
Is that right?
He asked. Mr. Whitman challenged their guest.
I don't see why you have to go online to talk. Why can't you just talk if you want to talk?
We don't own a computer, Amanda answered. Or a TV. Mr. Whitman looked up from his plate, possibly for the first time.
Well, good for you, he said. Nothing wrong with that. Finn spends way too much time on his, as far as I'm concerned.
Donald! Finn's mother snapped at him.
I'm just making conversation, Mr. Whitman complained.
Hey, Dad, Finn said, trying to salvage things. You know that hurricane? I forget its name. The one that turned out in the ocean and came back ashore?
Gary.
Yeah, Gary. Is it true that it lost a lot of its power after it went over us?
Over half its wind speed, yes. Downgraded to a tropical storm, but that's pretty typical when storms pass over land. Why?
Oh, nothing. Never mind, Finn said. He glanced at Amanda. She nodded toward her watch. We're gonna go up now, Finn said. His parents looked at each other but said nothing. On the way up the stairs, Finn heard his father say,
If those pants of hers get any lower, they'll fall off.
They all wear them that way, dear, Mrs. Whitman said. She's adorable. She'd lowered her voice to a whisper, but Finn had stopped on the stairs in time to hear. Nothing wrong with him having a new friend. He can't spend all his time with Dillard. His mother then called out loudly, Leave the bedroom door open, please, Finn.
I will,
Finn called back. He gave Amanda his chair in front of the screen. He sat on a wooden chest that he dragged from his closet. It contained an old model train set.
5 minutes to 7, Amanda said, checking her watch.
Finn entered the Virtual Magic Kingdom website. He logged on, selected guest rooms from the map of the Magic Kingdom, and then the option of picking a room from an alphabetical list. He located Finn's room and double-clicked. The screen went black. Some music played. His room appeared. It was a stone room, as if they were in a dungeon or castle. Using credit he'd earned by winning challenges on the site, he'd furnished the room with a pair of lime-green couches, 2 chairs, a soda machine, and 3 posters on the walls.
"What's with the color of those couches?" Amanda asked.
"What? I like them."
"Trust me, you're colorblind."
Finn's character was an illustrated boy who wore brightly colored jams and a light blue t-shirt. Finn used the mouse to move his character across the screen, get a soda from the machine, and return to one of the 2 chairs. The small figure sat down and waited, occasionally raising his arm, under Finn's direction, to lift the can to his face.
"This is wild," Amanda said.
"Have you never seen VMK?" he asked. "Everyone at school's on here 24/7. A few minutes after 7, a second figure, a girl, appeared in the room. She wore hip huggers and a lemon-yellow top that showed her stomach. A dialogue bubble appeared above her. "Angel Face 13," it read. "Cool room," appeared inside the bubble.
"Finn."
"Thanks," said the bubble above the boy in the chair. "Grab a soda." The girl character bought herself a drink and took a seat on the couch near Finn. "Angel Face 13.
"You got any tunes?"
Finn. "Yeah, but we're going to chat. Let's hang. Others coming soon."
"It's Charlene," Amanda said out loud.
"I can tell by the way she dresses."
"Yeah,"
Finn said, agreeing. Willa and Philby's characters appeared almost simultaneously. Philby with red hair, Willa dressed like a hippie. They too got drinks and gathered by the others, both standing. Philby, Fill It Up, complimented Finn on his choice of posters, clearly impressed that Finn had earned enough creds, to purchase them. Willa chatted with Charlene about some new clothes that she'd found in one of the merchandise stores.
"This is a really weird thing to say," Amanda said, "but I feel like I'm in the room, not just watching."
"I know," Finn said.
"It's highly addictive."
He added,
"I'd make you a character, but for now, I'm not sure the others should know you're listening."
"No, no, I agree. I don't want them to know. I don't want to be seen as a problem."
"You're not a problem,"
Finn said, thinking he should go ahead and register a character for her.
"Far from it. Without you, this meeting wouldn't be happening."
Dilltoast showed up in the room and asked, "What's up?"
"That's my friend Dillard."
"We met,"
Amanda said. Finn's character stood and led Dillard's into the far corner of the room to talk to him. Finn explained to Amanda,
"You have to be near each other to talk. It's called proximity for obvious reasons. Dill and I can talk over here and the others won't see it, and..."
His explanation was made clear as Charlene and Willa continued talking, presumably about clothes, but the dialogue in their bubbles was replaced with exclamation points, dollar signs, and ampersands, unreadable gibberish. Finn tried to politely ask Dillard to go away. Dillard didn't get the idea at first, and forced Finn to get a little blunt once Maybeck arrived.
"That didn't go so hot," he told Amanda as Dillard's character left the room.
"Tell him about it tomorrow in person. If you make it into something secret that you're sharing, he won't even remember this."
"Good with people, aren't you?"
Finn thought about this. She was good with people. For one thing, she'd survived his dad at the dinner table. Maybeck passed on the offer of a drink. He'd given his character a sizable afro, blue jeans, and a white t-shirt. Somehow it made him look taller than the others, which he was in person as well.
"My best. Let's do this. I got homework."
"Finn."
"Okay. We're all here."
Each of the others said hello. Then Finn continued.
"Finn, we've all had basically the same dream, or we wouldn't be here. Maverick and I both felt kind of sick, like fainting earlier today. Anybody else?"
The dialogue bubble above Willa's character started talking.
"Willatree."
"Yes. I felt awful, but only for a few minutes."
"Angel Face 13.
"Me too."
"Fill It Up."
"Yup."
"My best."
"So what's with that?"
"Finn.
They aren't dreams. Charlene and Philby and I were all in the park last night. I got burned on the arm. When I woke up, I had the same burn on the same arm. It's for real. It wasn't a dream. Maybeck's character moved around the room but stayed close enough to chat. Willa got up off the couch and moved over next to Charlene. No writing appeared above any of the characters. Amanda said,
I think you freaked them out.
Finn complained.
What was I supposed to do?
Angel Face 13. I saw him get burned. It's for real. Fill it up. What's weird is that over there, we look like our DHIs, but Finn getting burned means we must be part... Finn. Human. Part DHI, part human. That's what Wayne, the old guy, said we were. My best. Does anyone hear how completely stupid this sounds? Fill it up. We all got sick at basically the same moment. That may sound stupid, but it felt awful. My best. So what we do? Amanda, looking on, said,
Now, Finn, you've got to tell them now.
Finn, if we all go to bed, to sleep, at the same time tonight, maybe we'll arrive there together. My best. Tell me you're kidding. Finn, that's the way it works. I'm sure of it. Wayne wants all of us there at the same time. Finn felt a rush of heat. All five of them had crossed over at various times. They all shared the same experience. His fingers hovered above the keyboard. Finn, the only way we're going to know what's up is to go to bed at the same time and hope we wake up over there together, tonight. Okay? One by one, the characters answered. Willowtree, I'll be there. Angel Face 13, I'm having trouble falling asleep, but I'll try. Fill it up. I'm there. My best. Word. Finn's character stood up from the couch. He went to the corner and dropped the can into an open box, his makeshift trash can. Charlene followed his lead and did the same. My best. We all play VMK, right? What if that's got something to do with it? He had a point, Finn thought. The game had an otherworldly quality. Finn. We've got to talk to Wayne. How about 9 o'clock tonight? Each of the characters agreed to the time, a text bubble appearing above their heads. Then, one by one, they checked out. Finn's character stood alone in the empty room.
You look kind of lonely just standing there, Amanda said. I think I'm afraid, Finn admitted.
He couldn't believe he said that aloud.
I bet they all are too, Amanda said. Remember that fear is a human emotion. A DHI wouldn't feel fear. The way she said it, so calm, and like she knew what she was talking about, really knew it, gave Finn this strange, tingling feeling. He thought how strange it was that Amanda had just showed up the way she had, become his friend right as he began crossing over. How could he ask for a better friend? And yet, was there something she wasn't telling him? He caught a look in her eye as if she'd said too much and now regretted it. She looked away, breaking their eye contact.
Finn!
It was his mother calling from downstairs. It disturbed the moment. Finn didn't ask Amanda anything, but he'd wanted to. He checked the time. It was going on 8 o'clock.
I can drive Amanda home now,
she hollered upstairs.
I wish I could go,
Amanda said. She didn't mean home.
Yeah, that would be cool.
He caught himself using that word again. She'd teased him about it earlier, but not now.
It'll be all right, she said, standing. Remember everything so you can tell me.
He walked her downstairs to the door, where his mother was waiting with a smile. The three of them walked out to the driveway. Finn took the back seat. Amanda and his mom talked about boring girl stuff, favorite shopping malls and places to get your hair cut. She lived on the far edge of their school district, in what had once been a small church. There was a stained glass window in the center of the roof's peak, a blue background with a white angel. Lit from inside, it looked as if the angel were flying. He didn't know why, but it seemed appropriate for Amanda. Finn hurried his mother to drive faster on the way back home. She looked at him funny when he told her he was going to be late to bed. It was like something from Star Trek, or Power Rangers, Finn thought. He was standing at Central Plaza, a circle of grass and sidewalks in front of the castle. Over the next several minutes, one by one, the other four DHIs appeared. Charlene first, lying on the grass to his left, wearing her nightgown. She stretched her arms as if waking up. Philby was next, his red hair electric as a DHI. He came hurrying in from Tomorrowland. Willis showed up on the road to Finn's right.
She also wore pajamas, shorts, and a matching t-shirt. Maybeck came walking up Main Street alongside Wayne, who drove a Disney golf cart.
"Well, well," Wayne said. "The gang's all here."
He climbed out of the cart and made a point of saying hello to Willow, whom he'd only met once before. A loud crashing noise came from somewhere in Tomorrowland. Cheering followed this.
"Something wild's going on over there," Finn said, pointing.
A concerned Wayne said quickly,
"Follow me, and not a word until I say."
They followed Wayne and his cart up the ramp that led into the enormous castle. Finn noted that the DHIs glowed and shimmered once inside the shadow of the castle arches.
"Memorize all this carefully,"
Wayne called back to the DHIs. He led them through a gift shop and into a storage room, then through a heavy medieval-style door that he unlocked with a large key, and down a nondescript hall, through another door, and into a vast, cavernous space. Finn stopped. Staircases led in every direction, interconnecting in impossible ways, some upside down. A variety of oddly shaped doors of all sizes faced him at every level. Each corridor and staircase connected to the next in the most unlikely, impossible ways, all interlocked. It was a giant puzzle that somehow all fit together. And yet, it made no sense. Inverted stairs?
"We call this Escher's Keep. Walt admired M.C. Escher's work," Wayne said, climbing a staircase.
"Who's Escher?" Finn asked.
"Do your homework," Wayne admonished. "The keep was built as part of an Alice in Wonderland attraction, but it never opened."
"Why not?"
"Walt decided to keep it for himself."
Finn reached the top of some steep stairs, out of breath. He continued down a darkened hall and looked up to see Wayne standing upside down on a landing a few yards ahead. Wayne said,
"Don't be fooled. You're fine. But a single misstep, and you'll end up in a slide that will dump you into the moat. So stay to the left, and only step on the blue tiles. Never the white or the red. Pass it along to the others."
Finn repeated the weird instructions in a whisper. A moment later, he stood with Wayne. To the others now arriving, both Wayne and Finn appeared to be standing upside down. He heard Maybeck say,
"Okay, this is way cool."
Wayne said,
"This is a good place to come if you're ever in trouble or trying to hide. Without a guide to show the way, no one makes it up the first time. Memorize it carefully. The castle has several secret entrances. I'll show you if we have time. Once in here, you're safe."
"It isn't safe," Finn remembered Charlene saying. He wasn't sure he wanted to go any farther. Wayne continued,
"The other place you should be safe is if you follow the tracks out of the Frontierland train station toward the Indian encampment. There are some teepees out there that aren't programmed for DHI projection."
"Safe from what?" Finn asked.
"Ah," Wayne said, ignoring Finn's question. "Here come the others. Follow me. Memorize,"
he reminded.
"The next two staircases are fakes."
Finn was stunned by how incredibly real each of the many staircases appeared. The first staircase turned out to be nothing but paint on a wall. Wayne led him to the real staircase, and together they climbed it. Finn looked back, carefully committing the route to memory. He called ahead to Wayne.
"If I'm half hologram, half human, as you said, how can I touch anything? Shouldn't I only half touch it?"
"Have you studied Einstein, Finn?"
Finn didn't want to sound dumb, so he didn't answer.
"It's time you did. There's more space between atoms than there are atoms. And yet, atoms hold together somehow and form what we think of as a solid. We can touch, smell, taste. It all comes down to what you believe, what you think you can do."
The only thing Finn knew about Einstein had to do with bagels. He stuck to more practical matters.
"How will we ever get back down?"
As he reached yet another landing, Finn realized Wayne was nowhere to be seen.
"Take the middle door,"
Wayne's voice instructed. Finn faced half of a hexagon, three doors, all at angles. He walked through the middle door, which sprang shut behind him. He now stood in a pitch-black space. Being part hologram, Finn glowed, casting a bluish light into the absolute blackness. But the space seemed to swallow his light, to go on forever. He saw nothing. Charlene came in next. Even when the door opened, Finn saw no walls, only blackness.
"I don't exactly love this,"
Charlene said, a pulsing blue light in the dark. The way her voice sounded so close and bright told Finn that they were in a very small room.
"Look up," he said. "Are those stars for real?"
Charlene asked.
"Is anything real here?"
The door opened. Philby, Willa, and Maybeck entered. As the door shut, the stars reappeared.
"Wow!"
Philby said.
"Yeah,"
Finn agreed.
"What's this about?"
Maybeck asked. Finn jumped as Wayne said from behind him,
"Move to the center, everyone!"
He'd been standing there all along. The kids crowded together into a group. Finn felt the old man's hand grab his wrist and pull him toward what turned out to be a wall.
"Feel this?"
Wayne asked.
"Yes."
It was a smooth, glassy button.
"And this?"
"Another."
"Yes."
"Push!"
Finn pushed. The floor vibrated, and the stars grew closer. It took a moment, but Willa understood before the others.
"It's an elevator."
"An elevator without walls," Finn said,
for it wasn't the floor that appeared to be moving, but the walls.
"It's an elevator floor," Maybeck said. "A platform."
The overhead constellations grew closer. As they reached the Big Dipper, Finn could imagine it as a cleverly shaped door.
"You gotta love this," Philby said.
"I don't have to,"
Charlene protested, sounding a little frightened. The floor stopped. Finn heard a click. He pushed against the wall, the Big Dipper, and it opened. They entered a small apartment, full of old furniture and pastel colors, like something from Finn's grandparents' house. A small drafting table occupied the far corner. Most of one wall was filled with books. A tiny galley kitchen was next to the room's only window. Narrow and small, the slit window belonged in a castle. It was tinted with a blue theatrical lighting gel with a tiny hole cut into it to allow you to peer outside. Finn looked down over the entire Magic Kingdom. The view took his breath away. They were very high up.
"Welcome to Walt's secret hideaway," Wayne said.
Three phones hung from the wall, red, blue, and yellow. Philby studied them.
"Never touch any of those,"
Wayne advised, eyeing each of the kids. Charlene peered out the small hole in the window.
"Beautiful," she said.
That led to each of the kids taking a turn, ooing and eyeing. Wayne waited for them to face him. It was a small apartment with barely enough room for the six of them.
"You were each picked for a reason, or you wouldn't be here," he said. "Our selection of the DHIs was careful to the point of painstaking. We brought you here to help us. I'm going to share a story with you. A fable. It's something that has been in my care a long, long time. Walt entrusted me with this, and it has been in my head ever since. All fables have names. This one is called The Stonecutter, and, as it turns out, has been around a few thousand years. But take note, Walt called it The Stonecutter's Quill. It's up to you to find out why he added quill to the name. But here's the story. I believe it to be the key to stopping the forces that are gathering."
The kids looked for places to sit. Willa took a chair, Charlene and Philby the couch. Maybeck sat on the floor. Finn stood. No one said a word. Wayne had their full attention.
"It was a hot, sweltering day, and the stonecutter balanced on his haunches, chisel and hammer in hand, streams of sweat running down his back as he broke bits of rock away from the base of a wall of stone. It was hard, blistering work, and it felt like the sun had no mercy on him. How wonderful it must be to have the power of the sun, he thought. If I were the sun, no one could resist me. I wish I were the sun. In an instant, he found himself looking down on the earth, beating on it with his heat and energy. He was the sun, and he liked the way he touched everything and everyone below him without mercy. In his presence, people would be thirsty, they would be hot, and they would always know he was there. Suddenly, he realized that there was something impeding him. He could not touch the earth with his power. He looked down and saw that a cloud had interposed itself between him and the earth. Hmm, he thought. In spite of my great power, there is something that thwarts me. Surely this cloud is mightier than I am. I wish I were the cloud. And in an instant, he found he was the cloud, and he could block the sun all day long. What's more, he could rain on those below him, bringing cold, eroding buildings, drowning what he pleased. Surely there was nothing more powerful than he was now. But he felt himself being swayed, and quite without his consent, he was being pushed, and he could not resist the movement. He found that the wind was blowing him to the side, and he saw that because he could not defy it, it was mightier than him. How I wish I were the wind, he thought. And he was. Where he blew, huge trees bent. He could push great walls of water where he pleased. He could topple the tallest, most majestic buildings. Surely he was all-powerful now. But as he swept across the world, he came across something that stopped him. He looked and realized that the mountain before him could not be penetrated. As hard as he might blow against it, he could not push it to the side. Look how it resists me, he thought. Surely this mountain is mightier than me. I wish I were the mountain. And he was. He sat, imperial and bold, tall and proud, bolted to the earth, and he knew that there was nothing in all the world that could move him, could destroy him, or could overcome him. He was the mightiest thing of all. And then he realized something. From somewhere far below, he felt he was being reduced. He was being destroyed, torn apart, quite against his wishes, and he could do nothing about it. What is there mightier than a mountain? He asked himself. Not the sun, the cloud, or the wind. What could it be? With great effort, he looked down, and there, far below, at his very base, he saw a stonecutter.
The kid said nothing, focused on Wayne expectantly. Wayne said,
The things in the story you need to focus on are the sun, cloud, wind, and stone. At least we're pretty sure about that. Note the order. All four of these themes are seen repeatedly in the Magic Kingdom. Somehow they are meant to lead us to a solution, a way to defeat the darker powers that have begun to threaten the park.
Silence.
Comments?
Wayne asked, reminding Finn of an English teacher.
Be careful what you wish for. That's the theme, isn't it?
Maybeck asked. Finn said,
It also says to be satisfied with who you are. Not to mention that no matter how strong you think you are, there's always something stronger,
Willa contributed. Philby said,
So it's about power. It's a study of power.
Walt told me that story,
Wayne explained,
and then said something I will never forget. He said, I have plans for this place that should put things in perspective, Wayne. And there was this twinkle in his eye. There was something more to it than he was letting on. At least that's been my opinion all these years.
But what?
Finn asked. Wayne shrugged. He repeated,
I have plans for this place that should put things in perspective.
And we're supposed to figure out why he called it the Stonecutter's Quill?
Willa asked.
Yes. It's up to the five of you to solve the fable. Others have tried before you, myself included, but to no avail. As matters grew more urgent, we came up with the idea of the DHIs. You have one foot in the character world, one in the real. We need not only to solve whatever the fable is supposed to tell us, but we need to apprehend and stop the overtakers responsible for our recent problems.
And we're the chosen ones?
Maybeck said skeptically.
Indeed you are. Very carefully chosen at that. Intelligence, athleticism, artistry, computer knowledge.
What if we don't want to be chosen?
Willa asked. Finn answered.
There's not much choice. We're going to cross over when we go to sleep. But that must be your doing,
Willa said to Wayne accusingly. The old man looked back impassively. For a moment, it seemed he might refuse to answer. Then he said,
It's out of my hands now.
He raised his arms dramatically.
I've waited a long time to tell that story to you.
Willa spoke.
What are we up against?
Wayne said.
You know how you can sometimes sense a storm before it ever rains? You can almost smell it. Whatever is happening to this place is like that. We know it's coming. Bad things have been happening, but worse things are on their way. We're powerless to do anything about them. You are not. You five can change it.
Maybeck snorted. Philby, deep in thought, complained.
What if there isn't enough time?
He won Wayne's attention. Finn explained.
This afternoon we all kind of fainted. All of us. Right at the same time. And all in completely different locations.
Wayne's face wrinkled in concern. He considered this carefully and said,
Was this sometime after 2 o'clock?
Finn gasped.
How would you know that?
The DHI's here in the park. They went down for a few minutes this afternoon. Something to do with the computer server. Maybeck?
Maybeck shied from the summons.
That's right, Philby said, remembering. You're a computer freak, aren't you, Maybeck?
Freak? I'm freaking good with them, if that's what you're asking.
Finn speculated.
If we're able to cross over at night, and we certainly are, then maybe if something happens to the DHIs during the day, it also happens to us.
Wayne said,
I think you'd better hurry.
He pursed his lips and looked each of them in the eyes before saying,
Once the overtakers realize you intend to help us, that you're here to stop them, I believe they'll do whatever they can to stop you first. Maybe your fainting is the result of their dark powers. If they can stop you from crossing over, we're defeated. Fear is one way to stop you.
He paused a moment and said,
This is new ground for all of us.
Finn felt a chill run up his spine. Still deep in concentration, Philby said,
Walt was an artist, an animator. He drew things. You draw things with pencils and pens. Quills.
Yes, Wayne agreed. We got that far as well.
So the solution of the fable has something to do with that, Philby said. A pen, a pencil, a quill.
Wayne nodded.
Just as we've thought these many years. But what it is exactly and where to find it, we have no idea.
Willa had her own concerns.
What do you mean by dark powers? Some kind of magic?
What puts us in a bad mood when just a minute before we felt so good?
Wayne asked.
What makes us afraid of the dark when we know perfectly well there's nothing bad out there? What explains that sometimes we think of a person, and 2 seconds later, the phone rings, and it's the same person calling us?
Again, Wayne looked at the kids one by one, his face deadly serious.
Not all such forces have to do with hats and rabbits. There are forces bigger than all of us, good and bad.
Wayne reached toward the wall.
Good luck,
he said as he pushed a circular metal plate embossed with a silhouette of Mickey Mouse. A panel in the floor opened up beneath him. Wayne fell through and disappeared. Finn jumped up, ahead of the others. The floor was solid again. Wayne was gone. Sitting on the coffee table in the center of the room was what looked like a small black garage door opener with a single red button. Wayne had used it to send him back to his bed on his earlier visits. Finn pointed it out for the others to see.
Well, I guess that's it. So who's in? Who's up for solving the Stonecutter fable?
One by one, the other DHIs tentatively lifted their hands. They had accepted Wayne's challenge. He said,
Philby and Willa will work to connect the fable to the Magic Kingdom. There has to be something we're supposed to do with the story. Maybeck will find out as much as he can about the DHI servers and what we might do to protect them. To protect us. Charlene and I will study up on Walt Disney, why he might have picked the Stonecutter's fable, what's with the quill, and anything else we can find out. Sound okay?
No one disagreed. Finn was the acknowledged leader. Finn said,
I doubt this button is going to cross over with me. It'll remain here.
Maybeck said,
My guess is it's a proximity thing, like the dialogue bubbles in VMK. You have to be near it when it's pushed in order to go back. So if you're ever in trouble,
Get up here to this room and push this button.
Okay?
Everyone nodded. Finn indicated the black fob with the red button. They all gathered close together. Maybeck said,
It might be smart to hold hands.
The kids looked anxiously and apprehensively among themselves. Finn said,
It wouldn't be good to get left behind.
They grabbed each other's hands immediately, forming a circle. Willa took Finn's right forearm, freeing his hand to reach down and press the button. The world went dark. 13. The following night, the five DHIs gathered near the riverboat cruise as the first rumblings of a thunderstorm echoed like faraway drums in the distance. The approaching clouds drew a veil across the night sky. The river's black water swirled and lapped lazily at the riverbank. Wayne had mentioned the Indian encampment as a safe location, and this had led the DHIs to meet here. The cluster of extremely realistic-looking teepees sat atop a rise, overlooking Tom Sawyer Island. The encampment included a dozen human-sized models of Native Americans doing a day's work, chopping wood, tending a fire. At the fake campfire, an old Native American woman squatted while she cooked. As Finn led the DHIs inside the first of the teepees, they all disappeared. Charlene gasped aloud.
We're...
Invisible, Maybeck answered. Our holograms are not projected inside the teepees. Basically, we're in a kind of hologram projection shadow here.
Finn said.
That's gotta be why Wayne suggested it. It's the perfect hiding place.
Our holograms apparently have been programmed to project inside most attractions, Maybeck said.
Philby said.
The plan was to have us guide guests to the rise at some point. Still is. Sit there with them and explain the history of the attraction. That producer Brad told me about it when we were all at MGM.
Finn said.
But here, we're safe.
The small space was crowded with the five of them. Maybeck's crossed legs, and only his legs, showed because they were near the teepee's open door. A part of Charlene's left knee showed as well.
This is too weird, said an invisible Willa.
Maybeck raised and lowered his arm into the light that came through the door, making his hand appear and disappear. He said,
It's like cell phone reception in a tunnel.
Let's not forget, Philby pointed out in a whisper, that though we may be invisible, we can hear each other. That means we can also be heard.
Good point,
Willa whispered back. Finn also spoke quietly.
So, where are we? Willa? Philby?
Philby said,
The stonecutter fable is supposed to lead us to a quill. Maybe a special pen or pencil. Maybe something used by Walt Disney a long time ago. Our clues are sun, cloud, wind, and stone. As Wayne said, they're found all over the park.
The attractions, Willa said. Walt knew they would stay behind long after he was gone.
Philby said,
Rod's dealing with sun, clouds, wind, and stone.
We're working on which attractions have to do with each clue,
Willa said. Finn pointed out.
But Walt died before the park was ever opened, didn't he? So he wouldn't have known what attractions would end up getting built. Not all of them, anyway. Maybe we're supposed to try to solve this in Disneyland, not here.
Willa said,
But he had dozens of loyal people working for him. His brother, his nephew. He could have passed his wishes along to any one of them.
Philby added,
And Wayne worked here in Disney World. Walt told the fable to Wayne, and no one else.
That we know of,
Willa reminded.
The answers are here,
Philby said convincingly.
We just have to put it all together.
Finn asked Maybeck if he found out anything about the DHI servers. Any clue as to why they all fainted at the same time.
Was Wayne right about that?
You remember we had to sign those releases before they started turning us into DHIs? Maybeck replied. Some of these imaging techniques have never been tried before. That's what makes it look so cool, right? It's, like, totally new stuff. The DHI servers clearly control our holograms, but why they could affect us as humans is really weird. In crossing back over, we must take something of our DHIs with us. We don't see it, we don't feel it, but it's there. That might explain how messing with the servers made us feel faint. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm not real keen on someone else controlling me. I'm not loving that idea. I think the time will come when we'd rather have control of the servers ourselves. So that's what I'm working on.
Murmurs rippled through the group. No one objected to the idea of gaining self-control.
The fall games are tomorrow, Charlene said. Is everyone here going?
They realized they would all be there, participating in various sports.
That gives us a chance to meet again, Finn said. Let's meet by the snack bar before any of the sports get going.
Psst! Maybeck's arm appeared briefly as he reached across the doorway and pulled Charlene's knee back inside. In the shadow, her leg became invisible. Finn then heard what Maybeck had heard, the sound of footsteps, the crunching of gravel. Nearby. Security guards? At the same time, he felt a sudden draft, like when he stepped into an air-conditioned room. He shivered.
I feel you.
It was a woman's hoarse whisper, raspy and dry, as if she had sand in her throat. Goose flesh rippled up Finn's arms and down his spine. He was freezing now.
You don't belong here. Go away.
The sound of footsteps moved slowly away from their teepee and continued on to the next. Finn held his breath. The sound stopped and then headed back toward them. Inside the teepee came a soft shuffling sound as the invisible Maybeck and Charlene moved farther away from the door.
I feel you,
came that awful voice again.
You can't hide from me.
It wasn't just any woman's voice. Finn had heard that voice before, but how was that possible? The footfall circled the teepee and came around front again. Two legs appeared, with black stockings that ended at low-heeled, shiny black shoes. An invisible Willa reached over and found Finn's hand and clutched it tightly. Hers was warm and clammy. The black-stockinged legs bent as a hand appeared in the teepee's doorway. A green hand. The hand emerged from the end of a long black sleeve, green as a lizard, the knuckles bent and bumpy, the nails as long as claws. Charlene gasped aloud. Too loud. The air grew colder still. The woman bent over fully and peered into the dark teepee. She wore a robe-like black dress with jagged purple fringe and a purple stripe running up the middle. Some kind of costume.
Interesting, she said,
staring into an empty teepee. Now Finn understood how he knew this voice. It was from one of the Disney movies. But which one? He racked his brain as Willa's hand grew colder in his. She squeezed so hard, it hurt. The woman bent lower and lower still. The air grew colder and colder. A green neck appeared, then a green chin, a green nose, and finally her full face. Wretched, yet somehow beautiful. It was Maleficent, the mean-spirited witch from Sleeping Beauty, the most ill-tempered and dreaded witch of all. His eyes were stinging with ice. Finn looked away, thinking the cold might kill him. When he looked back, she was gone. Two footprint-shaped patches of ice showed where her shoes had been. The ground was frozen solid where she had stood. No one spoke for several long minutes. Finn was the first to break the silence, in a faint whisper.
Was that an illusion?
If it was, it was one solid illusion, Maybeck said. Philby asked,
What about the cult? Was I the only one who felt that?
No way! They all chorused.
I had my eyes shut, Charlene confessed. Me too, Willa admitted.
Only then did she let go of Finn's hand. He was glad they were all invisible. He wouldn't have wanted to explain their holding hands. Maybeck scooted forward, and as he did, partially reappeared at the mouth of the teepee's open door. About a third of him peered outside, the rest of him invisible.
She's gone, Maybeck said.
She? Charlene asked.
Her skin certainly looked real enough, Finn said.
That was green skin, not green makeup, mark my words, Maybeck said. I know the difference.
Are you suggesting what I think you're suggesting?
Willa asked. Finn offered the only explanation he could think of.
I think we just met an overtaker.
14. The wide world of sports complex housed 11 baseball diamonds, a separate major and minor league baseball stadium with seating for 9,000, five sports fields, a tennis complex, and a 400-meter running track. The facility had as many parking lots as an airport. Various buildings, all painted yellow, were scattered around the grounds and housed a cafe, locker rooms, and meeting halls. On this October afternoon, nearly 1,000 local students and their families jammed the complex for the annual fall games.
You're not telling me anything,
Amanda complained as she and Finn walked toward the snack bar.
All you care about is hooking up with the others. What, I'm suddenly not your friend?
It's not like that.
Looks that way to me.
Listen, all sorts of weird stuff's happening.
Well, that certainly clarifies things.
It's complicated.
Suddenly Finn spotted Philby and Maybeck, both in their gym clothes, as they climbed the steps to the central facility that housed locker rooms and an indoor-outdoor snack bar. A TV news crew was picking out kids to interview. Finn steered well clear of the cameras. His celebrity as a DHI made him a prime target for TV. Finn felt the curious warmth on the back of his neck that he always felt when someone's eyes were on him. Through the chaotic crowds of kids and parents, coaches and referees, volunteers and wide-world employees, Finn spotted a girl looking at him. Not just any girl. She was beautiful, with pale skin that set off her jet-black hair. Her deep-set gray eyes captivated him, even from a distance. He'd never seen her before. It didn't take Amanda long to notice Finn gazing at the girl. She stared long and hard at her.
"Who's that?" Finn asked.
"Who?"
Amanda tried to pretend she hadn't seen her.
"The girl you're staring at?"
"Never seen her before."
"Is Amanda upset with me?" Finn wondered. She turned and hurried off. Finn called out to stop her, but she pretended not to hear. The pale girl with the black hair smiled at Finn, who couldn't avoid passing next to her on his way to join the others.
"Hey, Finn,"
she said, as if they knew each other. He stopped.
"Hey,
I'm Jez."
"That's an unusual name."
"Short for Jezebel. It's from the Bible."
She wasn't proud of this.
"My mother, you know how that goes. Lawrence Finnegan Whitman? My parents actually thought they'd call me Larry. Larry, can you imagine? I switched it to Finn in third grade. No, it's not much better."
He couldn't stop his mouth from talking. He told himself, "Shut up," but he kept on going.
And then all the fish jokes started coming. "Finn this, Finn that.
What's your sport?"
It was as if she hadn't heard him. He felt relieved.
"Soccer. Yours?"
"Spectator. I came to watch."
Her eyes were gray with green specks, like imperfect jewels.
"Have we met?"
he asked.
"I don't think so."
"But you knew my name."
"I know all about you."
The way she said it bothered Finn.
"Because of the Magic Kingdom,"
she explained.
"You're my favorite Disney host."
Finn felt awkward and uncomfortable. What was he supposed to say to that? He was saved by the public address system. Players were supposed to find their teams. Finn wanted to catch up with his fellow DHIs.
"Well,"
he said,
"I gotta go.
There's a Girl Scout car wash tomorrow,"
she said casually, like an afterthought. When she laughed, it sounded almost musical.
"You could come by if you want."
"Yeah, maybe.
It's at Dangerous Dan's."
Finn hurried up the stairs and past the snack bar. He found the others in a sour-smelling locker room marked Visitors B. Backpacks, athletic bags, and smelly shoes surrounded them. Finn and Maybeck organized plastic chairs into a circle. Philby said,
"Will and I have made some progress."
Finn felt a wrenching in his gut. The deeper they went, the more he feared they were in danger. Philby glanced toward the door. Now Finn did too, because like Philby, he thought he felt something coming from there. A slight chill. A familiar chill.
"Are we going to talk about last night?"
Charlene asked, clearly unsettled.
"What's to talk about?" Maybeck said. "We were visited by Maleficent, a witch with green skin and black tights who brought the ambient temperature down to about 5 below 0.
He spoke with so much sarcasm that no one dared bring the subject up again. Finn told Philby.
"The games are starting. We've got to hurry. Have you got anything?"
Philby explained.
"The first clue in the fable is sun. There are plenty of suns in the park, but supposedly the rod with the biggest sun is It's a Small World. Well, I think we should start there."
"Start what?"
Charlene asked.
"Looking for clues."
"What kind of clues?"
she persisted.
"I'm not sure we'll know until we find one."
"Does anybody else hear how ridiculous this sounds?"
Maybeck asked. Finn said,
"We're gonna end up in the park tonight, like it or not."